Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Film and Podcast. On this episode, I had the pleasure of spending 30 minutes with Pamela B. Green. She is the writer, producer, editor, and the director of the wonderful documentary Be Natural, The Untold Story of Alice Guy Blaché. It's available on Amazon Prime, and you can also pick it up on DVD as well over in the UK. Both Alice and Pamela are hugely inspirational figures within the film industry. Alice, in particular, was the first female director and filmmaker who really sort of shaped the narrative form of cinema. And Pamela has spent the past 8 years of her life producing this documentary to hopefully give more voice to women within cinema. If you check out Pamela's credits, she is a creative director. She has almost 200 credits for title sequences. She works within marketing. She's worked on films such as the recent Muppets movies, the Jason Bourne films, a number of Marvel films. She's done television title sequences for Supergirl, The Flash. She has worked, as she points out, for Hollywood, but she certainly isn't part of that. And I think this documentary in itself, being an independent production, really shows off Pamela's talent for filmmaking and bringing a document together that shows the journey of this hugely important figure from the history of film. I had the pleasure of 30 minutes with Pamela and how Alice and the experience, the journey of producing this documentary has impacted on her life so far. Let's jump straight in then, because I'm really excited to learn all about you, all about the company. I'm really interested to hear just as much about you as the documentary.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you, first of all, for doing this and for having me. It means a lot. So basically, I guess how I found out about Alice, correct?
Yeah, that would be great. We can start with Alice. We can work around this however you're most comfortable with talking about and how it fits into everything else.
Okay. So my day job that I've been doing for quite some time has been opening credits for films, show opens for TV shows, logos, trailers, posters, anything about movie marketing and anything that can help content in film and television. And I had worked on many projects, but I felt a little bit of a void. I could see that now looking back. The people that I worked with were predominantly male, and I always looked for female designers and animators, and except for producers, there were no women in sight in those areas. And then one day, I had seen a show on television called Real Models about women pioneers in cinema. And it featured all these different women who contributed to cinema at the very beginning that some I heard about because they were actresses, like, you know, Mary Pickford. But most I had not heard of, and that's partially because I didn't go to film school. So Alice Guy Blaché came on the screen, and there were different women introducing the different women. So it was a Barbra Streisand special, and you had Minnie Driver, Susan Sarandon, Hilary Swank, and Shirley MacLaine started talking about Alice Guy Blaché, which is really Alice Guy Blaché. But she came on screen and was very much of like a footnote about this woman who had done one of the first narrative. She had her own studio, and she produced, directed, you know, done all these things, and I was completely blown away. And I remember underneath my breath, I said, wow, I'm not surprised, you know, typical. And of course, I went immediately to Wikipedia. And there was some stuff about her, and I was like, okay. And, you know, I let it alone. And, like anything, when you discover something new, you want to share it with people. So I went ahead and shared her story. And the more people I talked to, I realized that nobody had ever heard of her. Like, nobody knew what I was talking about. They thought she was made up. So I went online and I found her memoirs, and then Joan Simon, who had done an exhibition of her work in 2009, had published a book. And I just started doing research, and I was completely blown away and I think infected by the bug of Alice Guy Blaché. So it started with research, and it became an obsession. And I started just myself, like, contacting people, collecting stuff online, you know, paying for certain things. And it just grew into this massive thing, because I am somebody who's, I think, a little bit of a lunatic, and I can never do anything small. I think that's one of my flaws in a way, but I just don't know how to do anything different. And it just, everything was building on one another. People saw my passion and it became infectious for them. And using my day job tools, which is doing graphics, animation, creating things in 3D, storytelling in films that couldn't use reshoots, helping with narration, pulling stock footage and archival. So if you pull all those things together, that really represents Be Natural. I never edited before. I would give direction for editing, or I would pull clips, but this was a movie that I ended up fully editing myself. For some, it might be too quick. For me, I find it exciting, and didn't want it to be boring. So maybe it's because I have ADD, but there you have it.
I think everything that you summed up there, it comes across so clearly in the documentary. I mean, I've seen it 2.5 times so far. And,
two and a half.
So third time I've started watching it is really to appreciate how you've brought that together. Because aside from the subject matter, which is really important, I think the way the production values on it are phenomenal. And even when I watched it the first time, it immediately made me seek out more information about who you were, your background, and seeing how much of that has influenced the way it's being made. And everybody I've passed this on to and made them aware of have said exactly the same, and how much it holds up and surpasses, I think, a lot of documentaries that have been made in recent years. It looks, you know, like there is money behind it. And the way it's crafted, the opening montage in particular is absolutely stunning. And for me, coming from a graphic design background myself, that is a little mini movie in itself. And I think it's just such a perfect introduction into the world of not just Hollywood, but across the pond, and the way you kind of take that journey of Alice and bring it to Hollywood, and the way all of that, you know, the way it influenced each other, really. There's so much to talk about. I know we've only got half an hour, but that was my impression. So I absolutely took away what I'd learnt about her. But for me, it's such a passionate piece of work. It's a real love letter. And the fact it's taken you so long to make as well, that's another thing I'm really interested about. Was that to do with trying to sort of stop at points and then find more funding? What's the main reason this took so long? Is it literally because of the subject matter or other reasons?
So many reasons. And first of all, thank you for all the complimentary comments. That's very nice, and definitely is appreciated. Because even today, I question, is it good enough? Did I do a good job?
Oh, it is. It is.
And you're right about the documentary part. Like, I like documentaries, but I'm not an avid documentary watcher. I'm not an avid movie watcher. I like to watch different things. If, you know, I'm at home on the weekend, am I going to watch Kissing Booth 2? Why not? I want to know what's up. You know, I got to keep up with the latest. Am I going to watch Bad Boys 3? Yeah. Because I learn things. It's like, oh, I don't like that dialogue, or this shot's cool, etc. But my background is I like the latest technology. I like to read true stories, and I like to, I don't go anywhere now because of COVID, but I like, you know, museums and art, etc. So the movie really represents a little bit of my background of things that I enjoy. Like, I love the postcards, but even though I like that stuff, I wasn't projecting it onto Alice's story. 1895 is the year of the postcard, you know, so there was a reason for that. Everything had a reason. It was very tailored to her, and I felt that she was robbed because she was stuck in this cluster of people that were only known in the academic world, and I wanted to shatter all the glass around her and make sure that she was known worldwide in different languages, no matter what, because I felt that everybody should know about her. Everybody should know the meaning of Shiva is, you know, made by two genders, not just male, but also somebody who, even though she's a woman, you know, that's of course a big deal, but the things that she's done to contribute to moving the medium forward as an entrepreneur and as a creative that she didn't see herself as was amazing. So the opening sequence was just to have something cinematic because I can't shoot stuff, it doesn't exist. And I don't like stuff that's boring, and I don't want to see a picture that's floating, you know, in a drift for eternity. So I want it to be as cinematic as possible, but also for the audience to understand through visuals, because you can't have a 5-hour movie, that it didn't start in Hollywood. It started in France, and it was in the U.S. It was all over the world. And to kind of change the way we look at that period through a fresh lens with these kind of up-and-coming entrepreneurs and techie people that are experimenting with technology and changing the future, not even realize the impact that it's going to have 100 years from that time. You know, that's why I like the YouTubers and the Instagrammers, you know, the TikTokers now. you know, technology is constantly changing, and I just wanted to show that they were really cool, and nerdy is good, and that they were creating a pathway for us that is absolutely magnificent. As far as time is concerned, it was terrible. I wanted to kill myself. I mean, really, I shouldn't say that because then people take it literally, but we had done a Kickstarter, and I was making a decent living, and then I was completely broke doing this project, and everything became more costly. Editors that I worked with weren't understanding what I was trying to accomplish, and so I gave up on that, and I ended up having to edit it myself, and the funding was definitely a big issue. Constantly, I think directors and documentarians, I've worked in other people's films, so I find it sometimes a little shocking when people don't raise money as they go, because otherwise how are you going to get it done? And I had to take on that role as well as producing it, the interviews, like doing all this stuff. I mean, it literally put me to my knees, but I knew that I was doing something important. Even though at days I would, you know, some days I would just cry and just say, you know what, it's over. It's changed my life completely. I'm not the same person. I've learned a lot about collaboration. I only surround myself with people, I always say, people that are diffusers and that have your back and not amplifiers that just create more problems to have to solve. People that want to see me succeed and can succeed with me, and that want to do things that are fun but also have a spine of truth, whether it's something historical, but something that's important that gives you a glimpse into an era, whether it's an Alice era, what I'm working on right now, to something that you didn't know, and you might have a different outlook after, you know, seeing the content. And the amount of research was insane. So definitely funding, research, begging, bugging, begging. I mean, going on Facebook all the time, doing Kickstarter updates, you know, getting people to buy shirts, stickers, donating. It was just non-stop.
Exhausting. Exhausting. I cannot believe. What kept you motivated was the subject, and like you're saying, how important you felt the story was.
I had people alongside me, but I also had people that were awful. They told me I was never going to make it. What do I know about editing? What do I know about directing? Awful, awful. But also the people that committed to the passion. So if somebody writes you a check for $250,000, what are you going to do? Just not deliver? Awful. I don't want to be one of those people.
No, not at all.
Who has to deliver? I'm somebody who has to finish. And there were many times that I was just like, you know what? Thought of my French, but fuck it. No. And yes, exhausting. Every day, 4 a.m. to 11 o'clock at night, doing my day job and that.
My God.
I couldn't do my day job as much, so I did less of it and made a lot less money. And, you know, I had to get through it. And there were so many people that wanted to see it, but there were a lot of people that were like, oh, yeah, it's going to take it forever. She's never going to get it done. Or people that committed to the project walked off. But then when I got into Cannes, they were the first people to post it on Facebook, even though they had nothing to do with me getting there. So, you know, it's, you learn a lot about people and you learn a lot about yourself from that experience. And I got my my film degree from it, I think, anyway.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of summarizing. I mean, you did mention about, you know, you've not necessarily studied film. And I think, obviously, coming from the background you've come from at the beginning, you mentioned about using your skills and what you've learned through your companies and the work that you've already produced. And it's interesting that, obviously, as a designer in particular, it's very important that, you know, the research is crucial. And I think for me, I'm going to assume that is the key part of what has helped you produce this piece of work, because that is a colossal amount of research that you have had to do to actually make this work and build that narrative of a person that has been lost in history, and that the story needs to be shared. Do you feel that the research is where it's at, really, the crux of it?
Well, I'm not going to say that Alice is not known, because she was known before me. She just wasn't known in the wider world, in the mainstream, excuse me. She wasn't as accessible in the mainstream. Her films weren't accessible in the mainstream. The younger generation really didn't know anything about her. So,
do you think it's also to do with the fact that the silent era is a more difficult sell to contemporary audiences as well, and that has fed into it, and that your documentary has made every effort to, as you say, make this an exciting watch and an interesting film, most importantly, so that her message doesn't get lost?
I think it's definitely helped silent cinema, because a lot more is being spent towards, you know, restoring the films, not just hers, but like all these other, you know, characters of that era. There's a lot more stuff that's going to be made about them, especially covering, you know, women. You know, it's funny, making a documentary is extremely thankless. It's not like, you know, making a narrative, etc. It's like, oh, but who's going to do the narrative? Are you going to do the narrative? Like, people don't care about documentaries as much. So I made it to correct the record for her. I try to make it as entertaining as possible, what I thought would be interesting, without stepping on, you know, tramping on her, but also making sure that it was historically accurate so the historians couldn't come after me, and to give them a tool so then when they're in a class, they can play Be Natural, and the students will get a glimpse into the world with Alice being part of it, but at least that I can understand the world in a more simplistic way that is accessible. My day job, I have to compress a lot in a very short period of time, so clearly I did that here as well. Less is more.
Mm.
And even people that I work with now, that I've seen people from Be Natural, you know, everybody makes things shorter now because they know, or, you know, I'm like the word killers. They're like, no, this word is good. Keep it in here. It's like, but why? We don't need it. Let's make it shorter. So,
your job has been to summarize a film or a television program in 30 to 30 seconds to a minute in order to create your title.
Filler, 2.5 minutes or whatever, or sequences in the film. You know, to create like a dream sequence with some narration, etc. It's got to fit in the slot, and you have to make sure that it has the richness in the storytelling and the layers, even though it's condensed. That within itself is like, you know, a challenge, because how do you make something interesting that's short?
So, it's like the Saul Bass mantra of symbolize and summarize, that, you know, you're trying to just get that story across as succinctly as possible. And again, it comes back to your that opening montage in Be Natural is, for me, it is the perfect introduction to anything I've watched in a long time, I think. Really draws you in. And
I almost killed
you. Just that bit.
I almost killed, I almost went directly to the screening room. I almost killed her talking at the beginning. Although, it took me 9 months to figure out what the opening was going to be.
Really?
The way I function is, anything that I work on, I need to know what my beginning is and what the end is.
So was the narration then that Jodie Foster supplied for the film, was it done all in one go or afterwards?
I met her 5 years ago, or probably even longer.
Hmm.
And she came to my office, and she was very accessible. She came, she narrated, and I didn't see her for 5 years.
Wow.
And I was terrified. That's one of the reasons why I suffered through the project as well, because she committed.
Yeah.
I don't want to be an asshole and not deliver, because I put on such high, I have so much respect for her on so many levels. She's an amazing human being, besides being, you know, an amazing actress, amazing producer, you know, all these things.
She certainly comes across like that. I mean, obviously I've never met her, but she does in anything you watch, any interview or the material that she supplied on your circuits and when she was promoting it.
She's very real, and she cared, and, you know, she's seen me teary-eyed, she's seen me, you know, direct her for the narration multiple times. I don't know how she didn't kill me, because I was trying to figure out stuff as well, and, you know, the movie originally was 2 hours and 45 minutes, and then it was 2 hours for Cannes, and then from Cannes to Telluride, I think we took out another 10-15 minutes, and then it, you know, I was able to get it down to 103, because, you know, people were complaining, make it shorter, and I was like, oh, I'll get it shorter, don't you worry about that. But very patient and accessible and gracious and respectful of the vision, and extremely intelligent, which, you know, is scary too, because as I would show her the narration, I'm like, oh my God, you know, is she going to say something? You know, so it's terrifying. I really thought the first time I sent the cut that I was literally hiding under my desk, and I thought, she's going to say, you know what, Pamela, this is just not what you told me, and I'll see you later. But she said that she sticks things out, and if she says she's going to do something, she's going to do it. So I was like, whew, you know. So I think she's very happy about the outcome and the impact that it's had on many generations and countries. You know, it's insane. It's going to play in Croatia, Bangladesh. We're working on Bulgaria right now. It's going to open in Germany, Austria, Brazil. It's in Poland right now.
This is the amazing thing about this documentary, though, the way it's, how far it's reaching at the moment, what you're doing to promote it for even further is phenomenal. Do you?
Oh, and it played in the UK and it did well, but that's because of Kasima, myself, Cassidy Joe, and any people on the team that worked with me, because the distribution and the sales on this were abysmal in the US. So we learned pretty quickly that we would have to do the sales and get it into the festivals and have it shown around the world ourselves if we wanted Alice to travel and be seen worldwide. So we took matters in our own hands. Just as when you make the film, as an independent filmmaker, you have to really look at the landscape and how you can fit in an area where your work can be seen. Because why make something that took 10 years to make and worry just about awards instead of making sure that the movie is seen and translated in multiple countries, because that's how the character becomes known. History is changing. Books get rewritten.
Of course.
And that was the book.
Well, the awards don't matter at all if you can't get it to, you know, if you can't get it into the homes of people to watch. And especially during these times, how have you found that? How have you found it during the pandemic and trying to get the film further afield? How has that hindered?
We just sold it to China. We're in the process of hopefully getting it to Hungary. We had to be smart. So we lost probably $10,000 to $20,000 worth of screenings when this whole COVID thing hit. In fact, Kasima, the co-producer of the film, we all met in Paris for Women's Day, International Day in March, because that's when the movie was going to open in France. It took them 2 years to open it, forever, the French, to accept her. But I barely made it back in time before they closed the borders here in America. And there was no opening. And I was like, God, she's, Alice is cursed. She does have some curses. But we worked around it. The theaters opened in June. It was the first, one of the first movies to open up back in June. And the press loved the film. And we just did a bunch of virtual screenings. So we helped theaters by, you know, people doing virtual screenings. And yeah, that's what we did. And then in the different countries, they would have virtual screenings as well. And they did one in the Netherlands. They had two screenings, and they said it was pretty much almost full, except for the space of people sitting, you know, the COVID space. But we were supposed to have a screening at the Annenberg Space for Photography in Los Angeles, and that got shut down, so we did a virtual screening. So you find ways, you know, so for us, we persevered.
Well, that's good news. And yeah, I'll continue to do my best to get more people watching it, and I will certainly be showing it my own students. I think the best question maybe to wrap all of this up is how you feel the documentary has contributed to helping to change things. And do you feel that things are now changing for women in the film industry? Do you think it's changed at all, or do you think it's still, you know, there's a lot to be done?
Yeah, well, I'm not a real Hollywood person.
No.
I work for Hollywood. I'm a vendor to Hollywood. I don't consider myself in the same category as all these amazing female filmmakers because they've been doing all this stuff. I made a documentary. Yes, I've done commercials, shorts, etc., but I'm not in the same category. I know that what I've contributed has definitely put Alice in conversation in Hollywood and helped, as a by the way, you know, female filmmakers, because people do look at that story. They've started women's groups because of the Kickstarter when they saw it, and it's been a lot of inspiring aspects for it. Young girls want to be like her. They said, oh, if I knew about her when I was going to school, I probably would have, you know, my trajectory would have been different. So that's exciting that people are inspired, not just in film, like, oh, I'm going to open up my own restaurant because if Alice did it, I can do it. So my mission was to correct history for Alice. Hollywood did not finance this film and did not make this film. I didn't make it for Hollywood. I've included Hollywood filmmakers in there to look at her work, but they were also my free megaphone to talk about her and get the word spread throughout. So I had a secret mission within making the documentary because I'm a marketing person as well. So I was like, oh, this would be great for marketing. People will talk about it and get her name out there. But as far as the mission and the result, this is exactly what I sold to all the funders and the people that got involved in this movie. I said I want her to be known worldwide. I just did a Q&A in Russia for Russia on Saturday at 9 a.m. I mean, that's amazing. And the poster in Russian is gorgeous. So I think the mission is almost accomplished. I think people that work around me, including Cosmo, it's like, it's never enough until we get into all languages. They know that I want a poster in every single language if I can. But we never thought we'd get China. So, you know, that to me is exciting. So if we can get her seen in as many countries as possible in any kind of format, then I can cross it off my list. Most people would be happy with where we are right now, but I want her to be known worldwide. So if we can continue on her tour just a little bit longer and stretch the dates out and get her in the different countries, then I'll be at peace.
So do you feel that this hasn't taken enough out of you to continue pursuing other films? What's next for you? Are you up for doing another documentary or features?
No, never. I'm not going to say never, but because I work on other documentaries, so I help people, but personally, no way right now. Doing a narrative TV series that, you know, pilot is done. Now I gotta get it out there and hopefully get somebody's to say yes. And then trying to stay in that arena, more narrative. I'm much more of a narrative storyteller. Although I love artifacts and history, they could still be used in a narrative format style. And Alice and I are on a break. You know, she's sucked the life out of me. But, you know, every time, like, if I talk to you, or, like, yesterday I got this long message on Instagram from this woman thanking me for making Be Natural and the impact that it's had on her, and she's going to show it to her classroom. So anytime I get those, it gives me the energy to kind of go a little bit further for Alice. But on the other hand, I am exhausted, and I feel like, what did I do with my life? Because all this time has passed, and I need to keep moving forward. So it's a struggle.
Well, it's phenomenal, and I just can't praise it enough. And I love documentaries, and I do think there's been a real... We're probably a little past that renaissance period of documentary filmmaking. There seems to be a lot that's been done to sort of push them and get them more into cinemas lately, and obviously through streaming services. But I genuinely think this is one of the greatest documentaries this century, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt. And I watch a lot of them, and this needs to be watched by everybody.
You could tell people that it's on Amazon in the UK.
Of course, yeah, and I have been. I've been sharing that. I've been making sure I've been retweeting as much as I can as well on
Modern Films, which was an amazing distribution experience. They really cared about the film, and they picked really good stories, and they went the extra mile for the film. So we're grateful to them, and Kasima was the one who found them, so it's even better. So there you go.
It's phenomenal. I could talk another 2 hours with you. There is so much I could talk about with you. But this is incredible.
Yeah, if there's any other questions, feel free to contact me.
I wish you all the best with it. And thank you. Thank you so much for your time as well and coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Rich. Thank you very much.
No problem. And please take care of yourself. And I hope you're not being affected too much in terms of the business and everything else. And yeah, just stay safe and well.
You too. Please stay safe. Thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview. Check out Be Natural. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's on Amazon Prime and also available on DVD over here in the UK. If you've noticed, Erica is missing from this episode, hence having to schedule this interview. She's actually broken her shoulder, so I'm hoping she's going to have gritted her teeth, bones have healed, back for the next episode without me. She's actually with another guest, and she's bringing something really exciting to share with you for the latest companion pieces. In the meantime, I'd like to thank all the new listeners. We've had a fair number of listeners since the last episode dropped, and I'm hoping we can continue bringing you some more companion pieces episodes more regularly once bones are healed. And in the meantime, why not give us some feedback and a rating via iTunes? It all helps with helping to get our podcast out there. Or just drop us a message. You can contact us via social media. That's both on Twitter and Instagram at Film and Podcast. Head on over to the official website, which is www.filmandpodcast.wordpress.com. All the links are there for your listening needs, all the different platforms. Or you could visit my official website, which is the Central Hub, richpieces.com, where there's examples of writing. And recently myself and Erica have also produced some exclusive written companion pieces over at thedigitalfix.com, so you can check those out as well. There's been one on Paris, Texas and Lucky, the Harry Dean Stanton films, which I delivered. And also Erica has just recently written one comparing The Fisher King to Welcome to Marwen. So until next time, this is Film and the End.
That's just a sample of the films to come. You can't please all the people all the time, but we hope we'll please most of you. Most of the time. Anyway, see you soon.